This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show number 44. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath in Australia. Coming up on the show, we explore into the theme of captaincy. Ian Pond shares another fast-bowling tip with us, and we have a chat with the head of cricket in Montreal, Canada. And as usual, we always answer your questions this week. David, your season's coming to a close, is it? Are there any tears yet, or you sort of happy to get it out of the way?
No, I'm very happy, and I'll tell you why I'm happy, because England are now the proud possessors of the little urn, which they quite rightly won back after Australia somehow managed to sneak it in the last Ashes.
I thought we'd avoid that topic, David, but you had to bring it up.
So yes, it's all going well for me at the moment. England, the Ashes winners. And it's all going well for me with our club team, because we are currently top of the league, and it looks like we're going to win the league as long as we don't really mess up on our last game of the season on Saturday. So fingers crossed for that. And also our third 11 are also top of their league as well. So as a club, we're having a really good season.
Well, David, on the theme of captaincy,
yeah,
what we've been having at our team is, I don't know if I've told you before, but we've started up a new team this year. From last season, so a couple of guys from last season's team plus a couple more of our close friends, sort of thing, just shoved into the team. And the captain of our team is actually one of the senior members of the team, who's not much older. He's about 6 years older than me, but it's sort of new for him as well, because he's been a vice captain all his life, and he's never actually been thrust into the captaincy position. So it's a lot of things to manage for him. He has to sort of think about the tactics, everything else a captain has to think of. Plus, he has to manage all his players. So what he's been telling me, David, is sort of, because I have sort of a good relationship with most of the players, he told me to sort of take care of the managing aspect of the team. Sort of manage the players, manage anything else I need to help him out, sort of thing, here and there. So what's your perspective on that, David? Do you really think captains should do everything by themselves, or can they sort of delegate tasks to everyone else?
It's important for a captain not to try and do everything, because there is a lot to do as a captain. There's a lot to think of, and you can't, unless you're very good, you can't necessarily think of everything. So having someone, you know, like a coach or a vice captain or just senior players around who can help you is really, really important. You know, even the great captains had people that they trusted that they would turn to when they needed help with certain things. So yeah, I think Kevin, that could be a good opportunity for you, because if you've never captained before, a vice captaincy is quite good, because you're getting a bit of authority, but you're not responsible for the team. So it's a good idea to be a vice captain, and even if you're not officially vice captain, you can still take a senior player role. You know, they do say, I mean, this is a bit of a cliche, but I think it's true. They do say, if you've got a good team, everyone in the team is the captain, not just the captain. You've got someone with the armband, but everyone is taking the responsibility for everybody else, and that's what makes a really good team. You know, a well knit unit are people who understand what each other's job is in the team and what they need to do. And they know that the foibles of individual players, and they know how to deal with them. They know how to, when someone has a strop, they know how to deal with someone who has a strop. And, you know, they know who the fielders are who wander out of position, and they're keeping an eye on each other to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, and also, you know, when things are going wrong, the whole team are keeping each other afloat by, you know, motivating each other, lots of hand clapping, lots of talking to each other, lots of tactical discussion, all that kind of thing. The captain still obviously has overall control. You can't have a team where everyone tries to be the captain and tries to set the field.
Yeah.
It would descend into chaos pretty quickly. But I do think if the captain is in charge of overall strategy, and then you've got a vice captain, you've got a couple of senior players, you know, especially bowlers, because bowlers know tend to know what works for them, what fields work for them, and all that kind of thing. And everyone is going in the same direction. Everyone agrees with what the direction is for the team. Then, yeah, absolutely. That's a good team. That's a really good team.
We have Ian Pond again on the Pitch Vision Micro Coach Show, and he's here again with a fast bowling tip for us. So let's have a listen to what he has to say.
Welcome back to the show, Ian.
Thank you.
This is a question that we got from Twitter, from CricketChick638.
Hey.
Yeah, and she asks, Jimmy Anderson's natural head position is looking down when releasing the ball. Is that good or bad?
I'm not sure if actually on release he's looking down. I mean, his head might be down slightly. Certainly, head goes down a long way on release. Mm. But there are incidents of bowlers never ever looking where they're bowling a cricket ball. Matthew Hoggard, for example, was looking up into the clouds when he let the ball go. And I think this comes back to fast bowling being a very emotive issue. It's a feeling issue. It's very kinesthetic based. How does it feel to bowl well? What does it feel like to bowl fast? Does it feel comfortable with the way you're bowling? And someone like Anderson, now having gone through an action or a change or two, had a double stress fracture or stress fracture, come back, and he's gone back to pretty much his old action that he started with at 20. It's not quite the same, but not far off. He obviously feels incredibly comfortable, and the net result is what? He's bowling brilliantly. He's probably one of the best bowlers we got. He's, I believe, in the top 10 in the world bowling. Mm-hmm. He swings it very late, and he's a devastating cricketer on his day. He's gone back pretty much to what feels comfortable. Whether he actually looks at the ground when he bowls or not, I don't know. And it's actually not that important. And let me explain why. If you release the ball like a high five in front of your own bowling hip, so a high five to the batsman, that's pretty much going to be a good length delivery. And when you see Anderson release a cricket ball, his hand is just in front of his front foot. So he's releasing the ball in a perfect position to bowl, firstly, outswing because his wrist is good, and secondly, to hit a line and length for swing and also seam if it doesn't swing. So Anderson, almost blindfolded, could still recreate pretty much the same release position. So you don't have to be really looking at a spot on the pitch. You don't have to be looking in a particular direction. What you have to be doing is feeling what it's like to release the ball at the right time. And whenever I do coaching with youngsters, David, and also some club cricketers who want to get better, I always ask them, how does it feel to bowl like this? And I often get them to close their eyes and do some walkthrough drills to see how it feels to them to release the ball in the right position. Because bowling fast is definitely emotive. It's definitely a feeling. It's less about probably where you're looking on delivery. But to answer that question specifically, I don't think it's a problem whether Anderson heads goes down or not. What it does do on the advantage side, it helps him to drive his chest forward and finish his shoulders off with a full shoulder rotation. So Anderson's driving through of the head encourages his torso to drive through because the head's the heaviest part of your body. So a big thumbs up for Anderson's action. I like the way he bowls, and I wouldn't change it. Not in terms of his head position, certainly.
Just as a follow-up question to that, really, the England management have been criticised for trying to change his action, and then it all went wrong, and then he went back to his original action. Do you think it was a bad thing to try and change his action in the first place?
It's always a challenge for any coach. I'm not going to defend anyone at the ECB on this, and I'm not going to either criticise them. I'm just saying it's very difficult as a coach. You get a 20-year-old lad, breaks into the England team. I think he got 5 wickets on debut or very soon after debut. He looked like a world beater. What then happened was he had his action analysed to death, and it was realised that there might be some flaws in his action that could create some hot spots in his back or might lead to injury. Now, we've got into this state now of fast bowling coaches of being absolutely focused on injury prevention. The flip side of injury prevention is pace. I personally believe that providing a bowling action is safe, that you should just leave it. I mean, if it's wildly, you know, a mixed action or it just looks wrong and they're leaning at funny angles, then suggest to the bowler that maybe they could change. With Anderson, I'm not sure exactly what happened, but reading some of his own comments, he was sort of, in inverted commas, forced to make some changes. And I think when you're a youngster coming into cricket, you listen to the management. So therefore, there were some changes made up at the academy at Loughborough. They clearly didn't work for him. Not only did he lose speed, he lost confidence. He forgot how to swing the cricket ball. And the very reasons he was picked for England were suddenly lost. And then he decided, well, to heck with this. I'm going to go back to the way I know. The difficulty for Anderson is you never quite go back to the original. Once you've changed something, you can never quite go back. I mean, he's pretty close to it, but he's back in the top 10 in the world, and he's performing as he always should have done from 2003, in my opinion. There's a couple of other things, actually, I would change with Anderson's action, which he could make changes on, which are less to do with the changes that were made, ironically. But after those changes, he then got injured. So the changes that were made clearly didn't help him. And I'm very pleased to report that he's probably shut his ears now to the coaching and just getting on with bowling.
If you want any more coaching from Ian Punt, you can access Pitch Vision Academy's How to Bowl Faster coaching course on www.pitchvision.com/academy. This week we have a special for you guys. We have Senya Yakutse, who's the head of cricket in Montreal in Canada. He's also known as the cricket guy. And this week he talks to us about his passion for the game and the challenges of coaching in a place like Canada where cricket is fairly unknown. So let's have a listen to what he has to say.
Let me start by asking you, what got you into cricket in the first place?
I was always a little bit of a sporty young kid. And at the age of 6, I was trying to figure out what sport I wanted to follow. I had soccer and rugby in the winters in Zimbabwe, and cricket, athletics, and field hockey in the summers. I enjoyed field hockey, but cricket presented more of an all-round challenge. Like, I found that there was more to learn, more to do, and I just felt my coordination was a bit better in cricket. I just fell in love with it at school through trial and error.
And you set up Cricket Montreal. Can you tell us a little bit about the setup there?
Basically, what we did to begin with was, cricket is not a well-known sport in the province of Quebec. So in order to give Cricket Montreal a chance, we needed to kind of prove to the school boards and the governing bodies that cricket would catch on in the schools. So what I did was to go school to school, trying to introduce the sport during gym classes and after school sessions. I was able to do the introduction to about 7,500 kids in about 4.5 months, which is a lot of legwork.
Yeah.
But once it was done, and with the feedback, which was basically 100% positive, I got the go-ahead to, with an allocated piece of land, build dedicated cricket nets. Because what we've been doing indoors is all the softball stuff with the plastic wickets and the plastic bats.
Yeah, I get you, yeah.
But in order for the sport to grow, in order for that competitive edge to be to manifest itself amongst the kids, I needed the hardball atmosphere.
Yeah, of course.
So we built outdoor cricket nets, started at the end of July, and that was about a month's worth of work. And we just started. I started a summer camp, basically an 8-week summer camp, 16 sessions over 8 weeks, including all the basics and a lot of fielding, a lot of bowling, a lot of batting, a lot of theory, a lot of mental tips, like, courtesy of my sport and yourself. Thank you very much.
That's all right.
And it worked out very, very well. Kids absolutely loved it. The cricket standards went through the roof, about as much as could be expected over an 8-week period. And the principal of the high school that allocated the outdoor facility was so thrilled with the results that he's allocated the indoor facility. Which is why I went looking for a sponsor to get the Pitch Vision system in, which is the very next stage. So, long story short, in a 9-month period, a lot of groundwork has been covered in developing the sport of cricket in the province of Montreal.
And how does something like Pitch Vision help with your coaching of those kids?
How doesn't it help? It helps from the batting side. It helps from the bowling side. It helps with motivating the kids to compete against each other. All these little technical adjustments with bowling and batting actually have value when they see the results on Pitch Vision. I mean, as somebody who took cricket pretty seriously earlier on in life, and I still do, otherwise I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing.
Of course, yeah.
I can see immediate value as soon as I saw it online, I didn't need any demos, I didn't need anything else. I just, that's what the sport needs.
Yeah.
With this 8-second generation of kids who have an attention span of exactly that, 8 seconds, if you don't catch them right off the bat, you will lose them. And for cricket to have a chance in North America, pitch vision is, to me, it's the missing link.
So that brings us nicely to my next question, which is, you must face some problems being a minor sport in a nation with other interests. What are those problems that you face?
The truth is, over the years, cricket has gained a little bit of a bad reputation through mismanagement. So the biggest obstacle, in Quebec, people are very open to new things. Ultimate Frisbee, which is basically people just running around throwing a frisbee from one end of a field to another, I don't mean to talk down the sport at all, has just seen 50,000 registrations in a year. So cricket will pick up. The biggest obstacles have quite simply been the legacy that cricket is a long, boring game played by people in white suits who stand in the sun all day. And breaking that stereotype and making them see the exciting new versions of the game has been the biggest challenge.
So how big do you think cricket can come in Canada overall?
Last year in Toronto, in Ontario, in the last 2 years, the sport has seen 30,000 registrations from kids and throughout different schools. It's very quickly become the premier bat ball game in that province.
Really?
And I think that, well, hands down, baseball's on the way out. Cricket's definitely on the way in. And I don't mean it just as a replacement for baseball. I mean, as soon as the culture and the new generation of kids becomes familiar with the sport, I don't see why it won't be right next to soccer as the number one sport in the country. I think hockey will be sitting in a sad third. And I can't wait for that to happen. It's going to be a little while to come.
Thank you, Senor, for your time. Welcome to the listeners' question section for this week, and this week's theme is captaincy. And as always, you can tap into the wealth of knowledge on pitch vision in the Cricket Captaincy Coaching Course by Mike Brearley on www.pitchvision.com/academy. Well, David, our first question for today is from Mujtaba, and he says, "What do you do as a captain when everything goes against you? The conditions are unhelpful, the opposition are having a great partnership, and their partnerships seem unbreakable, and your bowlers are helpless." David, this question reminds me of the Australian cricket team's campaign in the Ashes.
Yes.
And it was interesting to see what Ponting did in different situations. Mm-hmm. Every time something seemed like it was going against him, or like conditions weren't right and the opposition were totally in front, I noticed that he tried to change things around a lot. So he was trying not to be predictable. So he'd throw in Michael Clarke out of nowhere to have a bowl, sort of to keep the opposition guessing and not to let them get used to it. Is this something you would do, David?
Yeah, definitely. There are two ways to go about it. That is one of them. So we'll talk about that one first. Changing things up, mixing things up as much as you can.
Yep.
If nothing's working, try something else. That's the, especially if you're looking to take wickets. It's slightly different in limited overs formats where you're not, wickets are a lower priority, but if you're looking to take wickets, if you've got to bowl the opposition out, which in most games, certainly that you and I play, and that's what you're looking to do, isn't it? Bowl the opposition out.
Yeah.
Then changing things up is a really good tactic. So what kind of things can you change? Well, it's anything and everything. You can move the field around, put fielders in unusual places. You know, take all the slips out, and you know, put in two gullies and two short mid wickets. Do something really ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
I've seen that. I've actually seen Shane Warne do that in a one day match. No slips, two gullies.
Yeah.
Short extra cover and short mid wicket, for example. that's just because you never know. It might work. And if your normal tactics aren't working, why not? Change the bowlers. Put on your occasional bowlers. Change the ends of the bowlers, because sometimes changing an end can be very effective. Not necessarily change the bowler, but just change the end that they're bowling from. Change the angles. Get the bowler to change the angle of delivery or the type of delivery. Try slower balls, try quicker balls, try variations, cutters, or holding the ball across the seam, or just lots of different variations. You can try bowling wider on the crease, or try bowling closer to the stumps. Try bowling around the wicket, try bowling over the wicket. There's so many different variations that you can do, and each one just might upset the batsman enough to make him make some kind of silly mistake.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do, which is not talked about that much, but I think it's quite good, is controlling the pace of the game. We talk about it a lot in more sort of dynamic sports like rugby or football, soccer, you know, those kind of games, where you can slow the pace of the game down if you're winning, or you can speed the pace of the game up if you're losing to try and rush the opposition. Well, there's no reason why that isn't a legitimate tactic in cricket as well. If you want to speed the game up by putting on a bowler who just comes off a couple of paces, just gets through a few overs, then you know, the opposition might start to, their run rate might start to drop, and they start to maybe try and get on with things a bit more quickly than they want to, and they make a mistake, for example. You know, so that's quite a good tactic as well. Try and think of ways to change the pace of the game. You know, be a bit sneaky about it. Maybe have one of your fast bowlers halfway through his run-up pull up and say, oh, my leg's gone, and you know, they have to have a think about it for a few minutes and waste 5 minutes and just get the batsman out of his rhythm, that's a bit of a sneaky trick, but you know, it's in that situation you could be desperate. You literally try anything, but controlling the pace of the game, I think, is an often overlooked thing. So yeah, very good tactic, that one. Now the other thing which is underused is to treat the game a little bit more like one day cricket, in that you try and close the game down and restrict scoring as much as possible. So what you would need there is you'd need some accurate bowling, you'd need some very pinpoint positioned fielders and good fielding, and just close the game down, slow the scoring rate to such a rate that the batsmen feel like they're not getting any bad balls, so they're going to have to manufacture some runs if they're going to keep going. The fields you would set would be based around, like we were talking about before, the fields you would set would be based around the strengths or the weaknesses that of that particular batsman. So you wouldn't necessarily just set a ring field and tell the bowler to pitch it up on off stump. You might set a slightly unorthodox field, but the whole idea of that is to cut off the run scoring of that particular batsman, because especially at club level, batsmen don't score all around the ground. If you can cut off their boundary shots, then they'll soon get frustrated. Now that particular way of doing it does rely on accurate bowling, so it depends on how accurate your bowlers are and you know what the batsmen are doing. But you can have, even on a flat wicket on a sunny day, you can still have success with that if you can keep the scoring rate down. One thing about both of those approaches is that as captain, you do have to have a good ability to keep your team motivated, because in times of trouble like that, then you know it's very easy for heads to go down. You know, the side go quiet. They think, oh God, nothing's going to happen here, and all the energy leaks out of the team. I'm sure you've been in that situation, Kevin. I know I have.
And especially in situations like that, I can't stress enough how much a captain's body language is important. Because whenever things are slipping away in our games, the first thing I look at is my captain, and if he's looking dejected, I know it's time to give up then. So yeah, if a captain is really confident and looks like he's still in with a chance, then it transfers to the whole team as well.
Yeah, of course, and it can be hard. It can be very hard, because if you're here thinking, oh God, we're going to be chasing absolutely massive score here, you can't let that show. You can't let that show to the other players. And it's very important for the other, if the other players are thinking that themselves, you've still got to keep going for the dynamic of the whole team. The wicketkeeper has an important job to do. I know myself, you know, I'm one of those wicketkeepers who absolutely never shuts up. Probably more gets on the nerves of people than actually motivates them. But my thinking is, at least if I'm talking, if I'm constantly reminding people that we're still in this game, and you know, let's not give up just because we're going through a bad patch, then at least people are, that keeps in their minds, at the very least, even if they're thinking, God, I wish he'd shut up. At least he's thinking, God, I wish he'd shut up, but he's got a point.
Yeah.
So the wicketkeeper has a role to play, the captain has a role to play, and of course the senior players, the people like the vice captain or, you know, the senior bowlers, people like that, they've got to be all the time plugging away, know what the tactic is, and plug away at that particular batsman or that particular partnership until you take a wicket, because it only takes one ball. And I don't know if you have the same saying in Australia that we do over here, but you know, we always say one brings two, or bang bang. That's the modern way of saying it. Do you say that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bang bang.
Not as much. Yeah.
Yeah. Bang bang. So I'm always saying bang bang out there. Come on, boy. Come on, boys. Bang bang, and it's all over, because you just add two wickets to the score, and you suddenly think, hang on a minute, it's not as lost as it thinks.
That's right. All right. Our next question is from someone who calls themselves RAKC.
Yeah.
And he or she says, I believe I have the qualities to lead my team with the greatest knowledge and mind, and I'm also very confident. Should I let the coach know? How can I make this clear when there is already a captain, but he's useless and never sets fields properly or has initiative? Now, David, the first thing I believe for a captain is confidence in himself, and RAKC seems to show this already, so that's probably a tick in the box already. But I'm not really comfortable with someone challenging the captain's authority. I mean, I played with a dodgy captain last season, and as bad as he was, I don't think it would have been right for someone to go up and tell him, I can do the job better than you. Mm-hmm. Sure, maybe you could suggest ideas to him and sort of tell him, whisper stuff in his ear saying how he could do stuff better, maybe. But I don't think, would it be right to challenge his authority?
I think in most cases the answer to that will be no. But I understand, you know, it can be frustrating. If you've got a captain who makes what you think are poor decisions, and you're thinking to yourself, I could do a better job than this, then it can be frustrating because you feel powerless. You can't do anything about it. The captain's making mistakes. Perhaps, you know, he's one of those people who isn't a very good man manager. So perhaps...
Yeah.
I mean, I'm guessing here. I don't know this particular circumstance. I'm just talking generally. So perhaps, you know, he's not very good at getting his point across. Perhaps he's quite a good tactician, but he's not very good at getting his point across. He's not very good at motivating his players. So it becomes difficult then because people don't really understand what he wants from them. But I can't see a circumstance where if you're serious about the success of your team, if you want your team to be successful, then... You would try and unseat the captain in some kind of sort of, you know, coup type situation. All that would happen is you would split the team into factions, wouldn't you? Because there'd be people who would want the current captain, there'd be people who want you as captain, there might be someone else who fancied to be the captain, and everyone would be fighting over what to do. What chance of success have you got if everyone's trying to grab power? You wouldn't play well. That wouldn't be any fun. It becomes a little pointless. That's why, for me, I would say that while the captain is officially in charge, you should get behind him, get behind his decisions, even if they're not the decisions that you would make. Because you've got to give him a chance. You never know. He might be okay if you give him a chance. If he's not, if he is really a terrible captain, then he'll probably be replaced at the end of the season anyway. Unless there's other factors going on. But bad captains don't last very long because they don't enjoy captaining. And people don't enjoy being captained by them, so they don't last very long. So wait until the end of the season and then go run for the office in the correct manner, in the official way, whatever that is. I mean, I know at our club... The way it happens is that we have a meeting. We have every year we have a meeting where people stand for election as captain of a particular side, and it gets voted on by the membership of the club, and whoever gets the most votes is elected as the captain for the following year. It may be different where you are. That's fine. Whatever the official system is, there's bound to be one. Then just do that. But in the meantime, what you can do is kind of state your case in a little more of a subtle way. So still back the captain, but back him in the environment of being the senior player. So do senior player type things. Go up to him and make a suggestion. There's no harm in making a suggestion. Have you thought about putting mid off back on the boundary? Because this guy is hitting over the top all the time. The captain might go, no, I don't want to do that. And you have to turn around and say, that's fine, okay, no problem. Just making a suggestion, and off you toddle to carry on. But if you keep making suggestions, he's probably going to be thinking, he could have a point here. You also might want to try and be helpful to the captain. You know, the minor jobs which are not very nice, to things like keeping, as we said before, keeping an eye out for fielders who are wandering out of place, or helping coach less experienced players. Yeah. You know, if at the training sessions, if you've got a good batting technique, then you know maybe you can help coach the younger players who aren't quite as good with you. Work out how all the players in the team tick. Yeah. You know, some people, the classic example, of course, some people need an arm around the shoulder when they get down. Some people need a kick up the butt when they get down. Work out those kind of things.
Yeah.
So you then in a better position when the time comes, you're a trusted person within that team. And you're even maybe perhaps trusted by the captain. Because if you're the person who can motivate the senior bowler, then the senior bowler is probably going to turn around in the season and go, I think you should be captain. But be very careful about when you're doing all that. Don't do it with the idea of, I'm going to undermine the captain. Do it with the idea of, I'm going to support the captain and I'm going to be the senior player, because you don't want to create the negativity.
Well, our next question is from Christopher, and he says, I've been chosen as a stand-in captain for 1 week on Saturday. How would you best approach this without standing on the toes of the current captain and other senior players? David, from experience, whenever someone stands in, I usually see them involve the current captain I see them involve the senior players a lot more, so it feels like it sort of makes them feel like they're wanted and that they know a bit about their game. So is that something you'd suggest to Christopher, sort of involve them in everything that the captain's doing, sort of ask for suggestions here and there?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. It has happened to me this last season it was. I walked in and one of the club officials said to me, oh, by the way, you're captain today. thanks for telling me. But the thing is, if you're captain for 1 week, like Christopher is, then there's not very much that you can do. I mean, you don't want to go making big strategic changes about the team, because everyone's going to wonder what's going on. As you say, a good place to start is to sort of garner as much information as you can from the senior players. Hopefully, you'll be a senior player yourself. I mean, you should be if you've been appointed as a standing captain. You should be a regular in the team, really, shouldn't you? And a senior player within that team. I mean, not necessarily, but let's assume that's the case. So you should have a good idea of what the current captain, what tactics the current captains use. And you will probably stick as closely to that. You know, you don't want to start, you know, you don't want to say you might think that your star opener would be better at number three. But you wouldn't necessarily move him to number three, because you know he's been batting at number one all season. So you'd sort of take into account what the senior players wanted. But also, it's important not to captain by committee. You don't want to be you don't want every field change. You don't want five people standing around going, right, you know, what should we do here?
Yeah.
And of course, the other thing is you've got to be careful about people's egos, because there may be four, five, six players in the side who thought, I should have been made captain there. Why was he made captain? So they might have a slightly bruised ego. So you've got to think about that side of things as well. So again, if you talk to them, if you ask them questions, if you say, what do you think? You know, if you turn around to a senior player before the toss and go, oh, I'm not too sure about what we should do. You know, is it a batting track or a bowling track? What do you think? You know, and he might turn around and go, well, I think it's, you know, I think it's a bowling track. We should probably bowl first. And, you know, just get the opinions of the senior guys. Just doing that will help. And then also be strong. You still have to be strong, because you still have to make the decisions. You still have to be the one who is making the field changes, making the bowling changes, deciding the batting order. So you know, be strong with that, and hope that the people in the team will follow you. I mean, if you're a senior player, they probably will anyway, as long as you are a respected player within the side, then the people will probably go along with what you say anyway.
This week's questions are in association with our captaincy theme. And as always, you can tap into the wealth of knowledge on Pitch Vision in the Cricket Captaincy Coaching Course by Mike Brearley on www.pitchvision.com/academy. Don't forget that you can catch all the articles, updates, forums, and anything you hear about on the show on www.pitchvision.com. Stay tuned for our next show on the 4th of September, with the theme being Fielding and Wicketkeeping. And so if you have any questions regarding fielding and wicketkeeping, or any questions or feedback about anything else, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Signing off from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampath.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.
The My Cricket Coach Show is a copyright-protected production for Pitch Vision. For more information, please visit pitchvision.com.